Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome to On the Continent, your definitive guide to the week in European football. I'm Dotton Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Nikki Bandini.
On this edition, never mind suggestions of a third spell at Chelsea. Mourinho says red is the colour. Did the master see red when his apprentice done him in at Bologna? Also, Harry Kane can't stop scoring in the Bundesliga, but can he match Robert Lewandowski's goal-scoring record at Bayern? And how last super weekend's result in the Liga Portugal made things very interesting at the top of the table. Not for the first time. Nikki. This Jose Mourinho, every time you come in, he's our lead story. not least. And this is what I love about Jose Mourinho. He gets beat at Bologna and he thinks, how am I going to be the lead topic on OCC? I'll tell you what, I'm a red through and through and through.
I'm certain that was his number one priority, was he'd heard I was coming on and he needed to make sure. Jose, who nobly has said that he doesn't want to leave Roma and he's willing to stay and lead a project of young players and accept diminished expectations based on trying to build something with youth. But in the same breath, almost managed to make reference to how, because he was missing Paulo Dybala, who, as he put it, without Dybala, we don't have any class. Without Lukaku, who, by the way, was sent off for completely avoidable reasons, losing his head against Fiorentina. Without him, we don't have intensity. And so, how can we have expected other than that we would lose to Bologna? And then talking about the intensity of that Bologna team, and I thought this was such a fascinating sort of mental loop to get into, because actually, aren't you the one responsible for your players' intensity? And don't think you or anyone else is arguing that Bologna have more resources than you. So even without Dybala and Lukaku, if you're going to be the one to lead a young players' project, where's the intensity that you're going to need?
The thing is, look, we want to come back to Bologna in a minute, because I think him saying that when they had to let Marco Arnautovic leave in the summer is interesting in terms of resource. Because I guess the game at Bologna went pretty much as you would imagine it went. I thought Roma were really good until they conceded the first goal. Mm-hmm. You know, they had the best chances and it was all relatively predictable in that they didn't have Dybala or Lukaku to put it in the back of the net, so it just didn't happen, really. It was all a bit make-do and mend. And from one perspective, I have a degree of sympathy for Mourinho. I know this is very unfashionable, but the thing is that the squad that's built from him, the squad that's built for him and built very much on, I guess, what he would customarily expect. The problem with Roma, and I think they've done quite well, if you bear in mind how poorly they started the season, to go into this match in fourth position, okay, they fell down to eighth because of results over the weekend, but it's very close up there. They're still in with a chance of the top four. They're walking this sort of tightrope because they are really reliant on injury-prone players.
Yeah.
And that's a massive problem in terms of their squad construction. So on one hand, you have the Friedkins who have responded to Mourinho going, I want to stay. I couldn't walk away from these fans. Give me the contract. And it seems that they want to see a little bit more. Never mind if he's prepared to accept reduced expectations. Are they, I think, is the question. But the other thing is that there's absolutely no guarantees. And if he wants a guarantee like 5-6 months before the end of the season, do you really think he'll get it?
No, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. You know, we hear Jose's monologue all the time, and we haven't heard a lot. You don't hear a lot from the Friedkins, but from what I hear, they're not in a rush. They're going to let this season play out. And obviously, if he can get them into Champions League places, which instinctively you want to say top four, but actually for Italy, it could yet be a top five. They get into the Champions League places, then that colours the picture. That changes what the outlook is going forward.
But that's the issue, isn't it? That if you told me now that Roma will finish this season fourth, I would believe you. Mm-hmm. If you told me they'll finish this season eighth or ninth, equally, I would probably believe you.
Well, the point that you just touched on there, and I never know if I'm just repeating myself when we come in here and talk about Jose, because I think these things have been true all season. Again, it's a logical loop, because the reason that Dybala and Lukaku are at Roma is because they have other issues. They would not be at Roma if Dybala was not injury prone, he would never have left Juventus.
Except
to go somewhere. No, actually, I think he would never have left Juventus, because he actually did have a chance to go to the Premier League and go for the money, and he didn't want that at the time. He was happy at Juventus, so I think he would never have left that club. He's a former Serie A MVP. He's a brilliant footballer. His only problem is that he gets injured a lot. So you sign him accepting that. You're not going to get 38 games out of him, probably ever. Lukaku is this great sort of tragic story for me, frankly, in terms of his talent and the way he's managed his career. So certainly a talent. But again, you would not get him if it wasn't for the mess that he's made of the last few years. Yes, it's true. Roma have had some tough breaks. Obviously, we talk about those two. Tammy Abraham is almost forgotten at this point, but he's also on their books and injured long term. But this is the reality. And the reality is, when you are Roma, you're not Juventus. You're not, Juventus actually don't throw the money around lately either, but you're not one of the big wealthy powerhouses of your domestic scene, let alone the European scene. You cut your cloth accordingly. And you can do that by being on far less resources, actually, by being Bologna, or you can do it by taking this route they've gone for, which is try to find these reclamation projects and find the value that you think other people are not getting. And they're both valid, but you can't then act as though, oh, well, if we just had this player fit, well, you were never going to have this player fit all the time. That was a deal you made when you signed that player.
You can't help but wondering, as a journalist, what is Mourinho's move? Because everything he says, you have to sort of analyse. And he says, I will tell you something that I've not yet said. Because he didn't say it like me, obviously. But when he says he wants to continue at Roma, and, you know, I want to continue here. If I continue at Roma, we need to really think about what we can do with the FFP limitations. That is the ultimate distraction away from the result at Bologna. But there is some semblance of his desires in that, I would assume.
Yeah, and it's a weird position, because on one hand, he has completely regenerated the club. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like created this incredible move.
Selling out the stadium, isn't it?
Yeah, and that is the big thing.
That is
the big thing. And, you know, that's important to Roma. You know, it's created a feeling that's quite difficult to quantify. I think from a distance, that's quite difficult to recognise. You know, if maybe you don't watch Italian football or you don't watch Roma every week, that's quite difficult to quantify. I think people will look at it and say, well, you know, same old law of diminishing returns. And it seems in that statement that he wants to be given license to continue with those diminishing returns. It's like, maybe, as well as him talking about the love of the fans, the excuse kind of suits him, really. There's already an excuse because it's like, well, what can you do with this? Mm-hmm. There are limits, you know. So if he doesn't go on to win leagues or relive all the glory days, it's fine for him not to do that because, as Nicky says, maybe it's not possible. But when you face up against not just an excellent young coach in Thiago Motta, but an excellent young coach who you've enjoyed some amazing moments with, because of course they won the Champions League together mm-hmm. at Inter in 2010. Does it all stand up when you look at the job that Motta is doing at Bologna, Nicky? Or is this another indication of, well, actually, you're being run past by younger guys who've got different ideas?
Oh.
I think Thiago Motta's making a lot of perhaps different clubs' appointments look bad in some sense, because yes, he's doing an exceptional job, and he's such a fascinating manager, and he's got ideas that are, whereas with Jose, the thing with Jose is, and I always feel like anytime you talk about Jose, you're sort of aware that there's this sort of super fandom of Jose that will come after you as a critic for him. And I really do think I sort of can alternate with Jose between loving him because he's theatre and I love theatre in football. I think you need it. But also, it does sometimes feel like we're listening to the same record we listened to 10 years ago. Like, that is Jose. Like, his all of this stuff, all of the distractions, all of the nonsense has been recently giving an interview in Portuguese because suddenly he doesn't speak Italian, which he spoke fine a decade ago. You know, it's all Jose. Yes, there's different things and they make us laugh sometimes, but it's all the same record. Whereas Motta is doing things that are genuinely different. That game, Lewis Ferguson was wearing the armband. Lewis Ferguson's been brilliant at Bologna. I've been saying this for a while, but he doesn't always wear the captain's armband. The captain's armband goes to the person that week that Motta thinks, yeah, you're doing a good job and you're showing leadership, you're playing well. And that idea, it's a small idea, but I think it's really indicative of how that club works. The starting goalkeeper against Roma was this kid, Ravaglia. I say kid, he's 24. It's a kid to me. But he hadn't started all season, and Bologna are competing for a Champions League spot, which is way higher than most people would have expected of them before the season. And then just for the first time all season in a game against a tough opponent, you just throw in a different goalkeeper because he's been playing well. And why wouldn't I put in a player who's been playing well in training? It's not some sweeping judgment. And all through the team, he's been making these decisions. He's been not posting his starting 11s until the morning of the game, doesn't let the players know who's going to start because he wants to have this tension in the group. And I think that he just has this freshness of thinking that is actually sort of really fascinating, especially because in Italy a few years ago when he was working, Motta was working in the PSG youth setup, and he gave this interview where he talked about his ideal formation being a 2-7-2, which got completely sort of ridiculed everywhere because, of course, it sounds ridiculous. First of all, that's including your goalkeeper. That's 2-7-2 gets you to 11. Second of all, what are you talking about? But actually, even then, if you listen to what he was trying to say, he wasn't really trying to say, yes, you line up with seven across the middle. He was talking about the fluidity of football. And I think he has a freshness about him that perhaps with the contrast against Mourinho felt even more stark.
That idea of sticking all your best players in midfield, that's something that, you know, is Pep Guardiola speaking,
right,
isn't it? It's a similar sort of thing. I think the interesting thing that you highlight about Motta is it's not just about the tactics. It's about his management of people. And what I think is really interesting is that before PSG got Luis Enrique, they looked at bringing him back at the start of the season because the idea is, and of course the PSG project is changed now. It's younger players. He speaks great French. He was there for a long time, knows the place. It wouldn't surprise me to see him become PSG coach down the line, because that idea of that sort of that equilibrium, that balance, someone who I think He's sort of almost like in his plain speaking to players, it's almost a little bit reminiscent of Ange Postecoglou, actually. It was a great quote, actually, after they won at Inter in the Cup last night, which is an incredible achievement, because Inter are clearly the best team in Italy.
Mm-hmm. And they've also won the last two Cups. Simone Inzaghi has missed the Cups. Like, he always wins the Cup. It was huge.
Yeah, it's huge. And so they take them into extra time. They knock them out and they go through to the quarterfinal against Fiorentina. And Motta says afterwards, look, I'm not going to sit here and say, we haven't won anything yet, because what we've done is amazing. And actually, when you think about it, how many coaches actually say that? I think that would be the worst thing, if like a coach for a team like Bologna that's been punching way above its weight beyond expectation. I think that's the worst thing, if you can stand there and go, oh, we haven't done anything yet. We have. You've created an atmosphere. You've raised the level of expectation. You've created hope.
But that suggests, doesn't it, Nicky, that he's got some time to go at Bologna before he starts thinking about PSG or anywhere else.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some interest from Serie A's big clubs, I think, the summer coming up. There's restrictions in Serie A on managers working for two different clubs in the same season, which means...
Yeah, same in Spain.
Yeah, which means nothing will happen until the summer within Italy. But I think that when you look at the situation at Napoli, where they have had a bit of a mess going from Rudy Garcia towards Mazzarri, that's a club I could absolutely see having an interest in him. I wouldn't rule out Roma and the Friedkins looking at this sort of game and remembering it when they come to the end of the season, they're making these decisions. Of course, it's a really long way to go. And time will tell if Bologna can sustain this pace and get into the Champions League places. But it's worth saying that, you know, even in the league, they'd already drawn with Inter. They basically haven't lost to any of the big clubs this season other than Milan. They drew with Napoli, they drew with Inter. They obviously beat Roma, they beat Lazio. They've been so consistently good with a young squad. And again, I've just said how much I love Lewis Ferguson. There's lots of young, interesting players in this team. I think there's only one player who's really stand out in this team, which is the centre forward, Joshua Zirkzee, who pay attention to this kid, because I think he's going to be something.
And I think when you look at Motta's chops as a coach, I think you can see the way Ferguson's improving. A player like Riccardo Orsolini, who's got better under him as well. And you talked about Zirkzee, who looked brilliant when he first came through at Bayern, but completely lost his way after that. And he made that move to Parma that seemed very ill-advised. And actually, after they went down and it all sort of went sideways for him, he ended up in Belgian football. That has actually been a stepping stone for him to get to Bologna, because it's made Italian football aware of him. Mm-hmm. I think what's the interesting thing about Zirkzee, and obviously Motta's working with him very carefully and very closely, because he knows, A, what potential he's got, and B, I think he sees in him a character who can be a leader in the dressing room as well. Because what I think's interesting about Zirkzee, with that perception that his career's gone sideways since early on at Bayern, and for the wider football public, they've still not re-heard of him. You know, I don't think he's kind of a secret at the moment.
Mm.
I think you look at him and there's no stat chasing there. He's someone who is incredibly altruistic for a forward of his age trying to rebuild his reputation.
I was almost thinking this on the way over. I was trying to define him, because in my head he's almost a false nine, but he isn't. Because he really does vacate space. He really does sort of... Part of what he does so well is his off the ball running that makes room for other people to run on. But he is also a striker. He's just, as you say, an incredibly selfless one. His assist on Bologna's first goal against Inter is really special. If you haven't seen it, it's like a flying backheel volley. He's so much fun to watch, but he's unlike any number nine that I can think of off the top of my head. He's, I suppose, perhaps... No, I was reaching for Alvaro Morata, but I don't think that's right. I don't. But there's a real selflessness to the way that he plays, as you say, that is a different model of number nine to what we're used to watching. But I think he's the standout talent in this group. And I do think Bologna have a very real chance to crack into those Champions League places the way they're playing at the moment.
What I want to know, Dotton, is how do you think Mourinho would take it if Motta were to replace him at Roma?
Well, what do you think? I think you'd take it with the sanguine mind that we know that...
Trademark dignity.
Exactly. And then what he says behind closed doors is nothing. But the interesting thing that I thought about Thiago Motta, who I didn't really know much about before this program, was that he is also something of a firefighter because he kept Spezia up a couple of seasons ago. And I wonder whether that is, you know, part of the magic of having a coach who can fight on both ends of the table, as it were, you know?
Well, I just come back to what Mourinho said again about his team lacking intensity. Some managers know how to get intensity out of their teams. And Mourinho used to do that better than anyone, I think. And I think that's something that Motta has done, certainly as long as I've been paying attention to him in his career. And I think that serves in all parts of the table.
So when are you next in so that I can let Jose Mourinho know?
You have to ask producer Rory.
Harry Kane, though, flipping out. Well, you haven't had to wait ages and ages for a Harry Kane goal, but you wait for him to dominate, you know, right through an entire season. It seems he's doing it. He can't stop scoring for Bayern Munich. What has happened there? I'm not saying that he didn't score for Tottenham. I'm not saying that this wasn't a brilliant move or whatever it is.
But goals might have more great consequences now.
I think so.
Yeah, right. I think
he might win something this season.
Yeah, it's looking increasingly difficult that he won't. Although we have to say, Bayern go into Christmas not top of the table because Bayer Leverkusen and Xabi Alonso have been absolutely brilliant. But what Kane has done so far is actually pretty remarkable. He got to 20 league goals for the season at the weekend with a brace against Stuttgart in what was, if not Bayern's best performance of the season, like really close.
And this is just in the Bundesliga in terms of
just in the Bundesliga. It got up to 21 with the goal at Wolfsburg this week.
21 in 16 games?
Yeah, and it was an amazing finish from outside the box. It was almost a golf shot, the one against Wolfsburg. You know, it was so cleanly hit. It was like James Ward-Prowse kind of clean. Mm-hmm. That sort of hit.
James Ward-Prowse does do that golf thing, doesn't
he? He does. Maybe
golf celebrations.
Maybe that's what's put it in my mind. But even Kane celebrated it. Like, you know, he's got his standard goal celebration. Yeah, yeah. He celebrated it like, oh shit, that was a really good one, wasn't it? But I think the thing with Kane is, because he's being exposed to a new audience and a new audience of fans in one of the biggest clubs in the world, it's like he's being appreciated all over again at a relatively late stage in his career. Because I know some Tottenham fans will take an issue with this and like listen to it and go, well, obviously, he's been amazing for years. Are you daft? But I think the fact is he's playing a different role, a different club, in a different country with different pressures, very different pressures.
Different role?
Yeah, he is a little bit because he, I think I've said this before on here, but he fits with Bayern better than he fits with any other team. He would fit with any other team on the planet. He is absolutely perfect for them and they are absolutely perfect for him because he wants to win. But they use every bit of what he's got so well. So they need that number nine. He's that. They need that guy that drops in the hole and finds the balls for Zane looks unbelievable. You know, Zane's always had that quality to be one of like the top 10, 15 players in the world. And he looks like it most weeks at the moment. And he's got that level of leadership.
Is that because of Kane?
Yes, definitely. Oh. And he's got that level of leadership as well, Kane, despite the fact that he's still, you know, only gradually learning the language. Obviously, I think the fact that dressing rooms are multinational means that sort of thing matters less than it used to. But I think the other little things you notice, like, for example, Thomas Tuchel was talking after that game against Stuttgart, when they're absolutely decimated by injury. They only had 5 outfield players on the bench. That they had a sickness bug and the flu going around the camp on the morning of the game against Stuttgart, which, as I said, I think was their best performance of the season. Joshua Kimmich and Leon Goretzka, their 2 central midfielders, dropped out and they weren't well enough to come back against Wolfsburg. So they play a 19-year-old and the guy's barely played all season in the centre of midfield. And at that moment, Kane is the glue that puts everything together. Now, the amazing thing, before he scored goal 19 and 20 last week, he was in bed with flu for 2 days last week. And they were like thinking, well, should we leave him out the squad? And he was sort of, you know, with a box of tissues going, no, I'm definitely playing. I'm definitely playing. And he comes out, he turns up, he leads the team, and he makes, he's one of those players who's not just amazing in himself, he makes everyone around him better. And because he's got that new audience giving him that bit more appreciation, that bit of like novelty appreciation, because they're getting it firsthand for the first time, I think it's completely natural that he's getting all these plaudits.
I find Harry Crane, as well as being exceptional, I find him sometimes like, and I think it's going to sound like teasing or being critical, which actually is the total opposite, because I think this is almost like his, maybe not his greatest strength, but one of his absolutely core strengths is he has this way of making things seem quite mundane.
Yeah.
You know, he gave an interview to The Standard the other day and it was sort of, oh, well, obviously it's been quite a good start to the season. You think, yeah, you know, it has actually, Harry. And they were sort of talking about that sort of the whole Lederhosen annual shoot they do, and he's going, oh, the shorts were heavier than I expect them to be. You know, it's such a sort of oddly like mundane thing to say, but I think that's what Harry Kane has that almost makes him special, because I think it's the same for him with football. He does these things that are not ordinary, that are not, but in his mind it's just playing football, and he keeps it so simple, he keeps everything so simple, that he manages to be incredibly effective, like taking that shot like it's a golf shot. And he backs himself in this extraordinary way. In the same interview, he talked about, and he's mentioned this before, about how he thinks he could be an NFL kicker one day, and he fully believes it. And maybe he's right, because frankly, I wouldn't bet against him at this point.
He's like a sort of Stephen Hendry figure, isn't he, really? Mm. He just makes everything look so simple. And like kind of almost like just a job.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a ridiculous
a job
thing
that
to
he
say.
Loves.
Yes,
but he sounds like, sometimes I feel like when he talks about football, he sounds like my granddad, who worked on my granddad was a farmhand, and like the way they talk about their jobs, sort of to me, can sound almost the same thing.
It's all quite self-effacing, and there's no flourish for flourish's sake.
Yeah,
is there?
But sometimes with football, the footballer, the genius footballer, just thinks I'm an ordinary person. You know, they can't sort of see beyond that. Sometimes the lesser footballers think, this is amazing. You know, I just scored and there's 50,000 people cheering for me. But it's in your stride when you're an amazing footballer. I saw Mario Balotelli once being interviewed when he was here at Man City, being interviewed with, what's his name from Oasis, Noel Gallagher. And, you know, Noel Gallagher's like fawning over him. And he's like, well, why are you fawning over me? You know, it's like, I'm just doing my job kind of thing.
Does the postman celebrate when he delivers a letter, etc.?
That's
right. But it's funny. I think the way that Kane does everything is so efficient, you assume it must be simple in his mind. Because I think, and that is the genius.
It goes in slow motion in his mind.
Exactly.
It?
That is the genius of him, really. I mean, I think I compared it in my Guardian column this week when I was talking about the game against Stuttgart. It's a little bit like when the Los Angeles Clippers traded for James Harden earlier in the season. And they said, you know, as one of the superstars of the last 10 years, how are you going to fit in to this already superstar team? How are you going to fit the system? And he just shrugged and he went, well, I am the system. And everyone looked at him and went, uh-oh. But I think, like, Kane would never say that.
Right, I think that's also important.
That's why it works so well for Bayern at the moment. They've got so many holes in them, but he is the system.
But I think, just to, like, pick up on that, like, actually, this is kind of the fascinating contrast of Bayern specifically is, and this is to do Lewandowski a huge disservice, I'm sure, as well. But with Lewandowski, you did hear these stories about when he was pursuing that goal record, you know, he'd get grouchy about it and he was telling teammates off because he felt like they weren't giving him enough of the ball when he wanted to get that record. And like, Harry Kane is somewhere at the other end of the spectrum, not making a big deal about anything. And at the moment, he's on course to smash Lewandowski's record, not just to beat it.
Yeah,
that's the story, isn't it? That is the story. And I think you've nailed it on it. Its head. However, I did start this conversation by saying he's on course, surely, to win some title, which he didn't win in North London. You might remember
but
that,
he might,
Nicky.
You say that, but actually I did want to come back on that as well, because right now they're out of the cup. They're second in the league, and the Champions League is not like a guarantee, is it? There's a lot of good teams in that.
And don't forget the Euros, is what I was thinking. If he is the glue, as you say, if he is the glue that brings everybody in, if he is the system, then surely Gareth Southgate must be looking at that and thinking, you know, we've got one hand, surely.
But I don't think he needs to be that with England. If he needs to be the system with Bayern, he doesn't need it to be that with England. And it'd be interesting, just like it'd be interesting to see if Jude Bellingham, who's obviously having an incredible season goal-wise. You know, there's discussion in Spain at the moment of, you know, he could become the second midfielder in La Liga history to become the Pichichi, the top scorer of the season. Only previous non-striker to get it, Luis Aragonés for Atletico in 1970,
which is remarkable.
Oh, so the thing is that Bellingham's role will not endure as it is. When they go and get Mbappe or whatever like top-ranked striker they go and get, he will go back to being a number eight. So he won't be scoring goals in the same sort of volume that he is, I would imagine. So this season is to be enjoyed for Jude Bellingham and for everyone watching him, because I don't think it will continue like that. And I just wonder with Kane, I don't think it will drastically change as such, because they need him to be what he is. But I just wonder, is there a slight adjustment to what he does or what he's needed to do when Bayern get more of a functional team? Because they're going to have to do something in the January window. And the last couple of weeks have really affected that, because you look at the fact that they still lacking a defensive midfielder, obviously, but the fact that they've been decimated by injuries and the fact that Kim Min-jae is off to the Asia Cup in January, all of that is making them think, yeah, we're going to have to do something. So Kane's got help on the way, I think.
I forgot that the reason why I remember Aragonés is because he was a coach. I was thinking, do I remember he was a footballer? I don't think so, but anyway. Maybe it bodes well for England. We'll wait and see on that one. Good luck, Harry. We're all behind you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Now, there is something going on in Portugal at the moment. When you look at the Liga Portugal table, it looks slightly different from the way it looked before the weekend's super weekend. Do you mind explaining to us, Andy, what a super weekend is in Liga Portugal?
Well, they had the top four play each other this weekend. So the fixtures were kind of arranged as such. So Sunday night, you had Braga versus Benfica. Monday night, you had the latest classical between Sporting and Porto.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I wanted to ask you guys, what do you think about concentrating the big fixtures in one mega weekend? Do you prefer to have them spread out, or do you like it to be this, you know, crescendo?
Yeah, I think I prefer it spread out. Definitely as a journalist, I prefer it spread out, because you want to be able to spread your stories through a season.
Only 500 words on each other.
But as a fan, I don't know. I suppose you think when there is a close title race and you'd love to have that scenario at the end of a season where teams are having to play concurrently, and you get the drama like you did at the end of the Champions League group with Newcastle and Milan and PSG and Dortmund. That stuff is thrilling. In the middle of a season, to me, it feels a bit like, I don't know, it's a bit like when you... I'll explain it to you in the most ridiculous way I can think, which is when I was a little kid, when we would go trick-or-treating, my brother and I have an older brother, he's 2 years older, he would eat all of his chocolates right away and I would make mine last for weeks.
That's a good so comparison.
I think that's who I am as a person. I want to spread my joy over several weeks, whereas my brother was straight in and had more, so different strokes.
Well, I eat my chocolates all in one go. I can't stop once I start. This is
a proper, like, if we're going to slightly corrupt the Portuguese-speaking venues, this is a whole churrascaria sort of business, isn't it?
But I do like my games to be spread out, because I think that you're losing out the... A league table is, the drama of a league table is also anchored in the mid-table teams playing each other, amongst other things, not just the teams at the bottom, etc.
So you're saying it's like about modern football's obsession with everything having to be about the elite level?
Yeah, I
do. Yeah, I'm not sure if that's the case. When I have to choose which game to watch, when there's like four different games on, and I only have one telly, unlike some people.
Look, I have to use an iPad, a computer and a phone like everyone else.
Was I looking in your direction?
Yes.
Well, actually,
we've got cameras in here. You can't even cover the tracks. Come on.
So let's talk about how this Super Weekend unraveled. Benfica, first of all, well, they didn't do too badly. They're second in the league now as a result of the Super Weekend.
Yeah, although champions, so more is expected of them, and it's been a tricky first half of the season because they've been so poor in the Champions League. Now, they've had that little boost from winning the last game at Salzburg, which means they're in European competition. They're in the Europa League, and they've got that playoff coming up against Toulouse, which I don't think it's unfair to Toulouse to say you would assume that Benfica would win over those two legs. So they've got something to aim for there. I think there was great satisfaction in the manner in which they won at Braga, because Braga are very good, particularly at home. And Trubin had a great game in goal. And it's needed to happen, because it's taken a little while for him to settle after coming to Shakhtar Donetsk, because I was chatting on our friend Andrew Todos's show recently about the fact that, you know, that there's debate in Ukraine over whether Lunin, who's doing great things for Real Madrid at the moment with Kepa out injured, or Trubin should be first choice for the Ukraine national team at the moment. And Trubin has been fated for a while. He's still a young goalkeeper. But, you know, now I think being consistently under pressure for Benfica, where one mistake as a goalkeeper can kind of half ruin the team's season, you know, because the big games count for so much. And going back to this idea of like a super weekend, I think it's different in a Portuguese context, because the big games mean so much, because there's such an imbalance between the biggest clubs and the smallest clubs. If you think of the clubs in the bottom bit of the division, you know, they're playing in tiny stadiums in front of tiny crowds. They've got budgets that, you know, a lot of League Two teams have better budgets than. This is all in the same division, in the Portuguese top division. And, you know, they're coming up against Champions League teams. So it's a little bit like in Turkey. The biggest games really do mean that bit more. And I think that's reflected in, even in the way the placement's done, because, you know, it's not goal difference that separates teams on equal points. It's the head-to-head record. And that, to me, makes better sense when you're going to celebrate a title. I know what you were saying about, it's about mid-table teams as well. But I would always rather a team win, if points were equal, on how they did in the biggest games between those teams.
I agree with that.
Rather than, you know, we racked up a score against some chumps. To me, that seems, that adds something, and that adds an extra level of intensity to those biggest games. They're the games that matter, and they're played like they matter. And I think it encourages a certain level of bravery that you don't always get. You know, sometimes you have the feeling that the biggest games can be the biggest damp squibs. That won't happen in this situation if it's head-to-head, because you have to go for it. You have to go for it. And I think to encourage that is a good thing. And certainly Sporting did that against Porto on Monday night as well. They really went for it. And that's why they're leaders now.
Well, Sporting, there's a story there which is almost unbelievable, Nicky. Sporting's record signing, Victor Gyökeres, once upon a time of Coventry City.
I mean, 5 minutes ago.
Well, yeah. My once upon a times are very short, you know. Yes. You should know that if you've read my book.
Football moves quickly.
Yeah, exactly.
And so does Dotton.
But not this quickly, I don't. I mean, he's gone from Coventry City to become one of the most expensive players in Europe. And I'm hearing, when we were speaking earlier on, that his value might even go up another 50% from 100 million to 150 million. That is not a Coventry City player, surely not.
It's fascinating. I'm fairly certain Coventry will make some of the money from the next transfer. I'm pretty sure they're going to take a cut of that from a sell-on fee.
Do you think that's going to become one of the most common OTC questions, ask OTC questions? Because at the moment, we get a lot of Aberdeen fans going, when are Bologna going to sell Lewis Ferguson? Yeah. And soon we're going to have lots of Coventry fans going, when are Sporting selling Gyökeres?
I actually did see someone on Twitter just starts coming in and saying about Gyökeres, like, look how much money we're going to make. And it's such a online conversation, isn't it, fans? So great news. The player we sold last summer is going to get sold again and then we'll make money. It's one of the many odd things about modern football, fans cheering for their team's balance sheet. It's a fascinating rise. And look, he was prolific at Coventry. He scored 21 goals last season. He had 12 assists as well. He was very, very effective in the championship. But it is astonishing that he was allowed to slip under all these Premier League clubs' radars in the summer. And now they're going to talk about, yes, I think his release clause is 100 million euros, but the suggestion is that because there could even be a bidding war, it could go higher than that.
And Sporting are trying to get him to accept a new contract, which would take that clause up to 150.
Yeah.
As well. I mean, we have to say that the buyout clause, which is legally required in Portuguese football contracts, is just a bargaining position, really. Mm. So rather than necessarily saying Victor Gyökeres is worth 100 million euros, it's a fallback. You know, you're not going to have a team come along and say, well, you bought him for 20, we're going to give you 40. No. It's like, well, no, you're not. Mm. You know, and we have got some leeway to work with. It's almost like a bargaining position.
You
really
asked a question. I don't know if it's disrespectful for me to ask a question. Is he worth it?
Not 100 mil.
Yeah.
But that's not really the claim, I don't think. I think what is clear is that Sporting have got themselves a bargain. He has been the most influential player in the division this season. And bearing in mind that when Angel Di Maria, even at 35, re-signs for Benfica, you're thinking, right, this guy's the best player in the league by an absolute mile. You know, this was the guy's man of the match in the World Cup final a year ago. And yet, Gyökeres turns up and he absolutely changes everything for Sporting. You go back to the start of last season and they lose Palinha, and they lose Matheus Nunes in like pretty quick succession, which takes them a while to get over, understandably, because it completely rips apart their midfield. And they've gradually got things back together. They lost Manuel Ugarte, of course, to PSG at the beginning of this season and got paid very nicely for it, we have to say as well, because he did go for the clause. And I think really, Gyökeres, as well as making an incredible connection with the fans, as well as scoring the goals, as well as leading the line and bullying defenders and turning up in the big matches. Because I think the notable thing about this game against Porto, and Porto are no shrinking violets, Sergio Conceição teams are physically tough, they get in your face. You know, I think normally they are a team that sort of don't back down from situations. And Sporting, mainly because of Gyökeres, were able to get out there and go, yeah, you ain't going to bully us. And when you look at Ruben Amorim, the coach, he's a great coach who I think will go on to have a really good career. And if you look at the last 10 Clásicos that he's been involved in, so against Porto and Benfica, he'd not won a single one of them. And this was starting to, you know, eat away a little bit about people's perception of him, because they'd found new and exciting ways not to win Clásicos. You know, they're a goal up at Benfica earlier this season and conceded two quite near the end. a game that actually Gyökeres has scored earlier on in that. But you know he's got the sort of football intelligence to link with Marcus Edwards, for example. He's incredibly high football IQ and Pedro Gonçalves, and yet at the same time he can take on Pepe, and Pepe's still a good player even at nearly 41, and he's a personality, and obviously he comes out for a classical thinking, right, I'm going to stamp my authority on it. And Gyökeres is going, actually, no, I'm going to stamp my authority on you. And he scores early on and it absolutely takes him to the cleaners.
Because it was a brilliant goal. And this is, I was trying to look up a goal he scored for Wigan last year. He's got this way about him, because he's not, and this is where I would say some reservations come in as well about that 100 million fee. He's not blazing fast. He's not going to sort of tear past everyone. And he's not small, but he's also not in that Erling Haaland way overly physical. But he is a dribbler. He is someone he expects to get on the ball and to beat players, which he did in this game. That's why I was thinking of that Wigan goal, because it's him taking it from almost halfway. And I think there's uncertainty in my mind about how those skills translate to the Premier League. I think they can, but I think there's also lots of players with that sort of skill set who don't explode in the way that everyone imagines they're going to. And that's where, I suppose, on the basis of this is just half a season and...
I think...
It's not half a season because of Wembley Coventry, but that is the Championship, and that's why Premier League clubs didn't jump on him already.
Yeah, and I think there was obviously that question, wasn't there, amongst Premier League recruitment departments. But I think from their perspective, because money is sort of, and value is sort of an abstract concept in the Premier League,
yes,
they were quite happy to let him walk and go, okay, let's see how you do elsewhere.
Mm.
And I guess the question is, do you make the move, especially if you're a side in, like, say, the middle of the table? Because to me, him going to Chelsea is unrealistic at the moment, for example. Mm. I don't think that's good for him, and I don't think that's good for Chelsea. It's too soon, as you say.
Is unrealistic it won't happen, or is unrealistic it shouldn't happen? Because Chelsea have done a fair bit of that. So.
Yeah, shouldn't more than won't. But I think in terms of like what would be like most normal and best for his development as well, I think that next move would be a sort of, you know, ambitious middle of the table sort of Premier League club, I suppose. But you look at that and you think, well, you know, how long can you let it ride out? You know, if you're waiting until the point where next season, where he starts scoring goals in the Champions League, all of a sudden it starts getting really expensive.
Mm.
And that's something different. And I guess from a sporting perspective, at the moment, Gyökeres, as well as playing very well for them, it's kind of doing him a favour, because he's overshadowing Edwards, who I'm amazed that Premier League club hasn't taken him so far. Mm. And also Pedro Gonçalves, who has a release clause round about the 60 million mark as well. And he's an incredibly intelligent player. Didn't come off for him when he was very young at Wolves, but he was very young. And I think you have to respect that. He's really built his career since then. As well as getting maximum value, which is obviously part of the conversation in Portuguese football, they've got to figure out a way that they don't lose all those three at the same time. Mm. But they've got to figure out a way to stagger that if they're to maintain success.
Very good point. And no doubt we'll return to talk about Victor Gyökeres in the new year. For this year, I think he must be thinking, all my Christmases have come in one go. Let me try and spread them out over the next few years. It's that time when we ask both of you for a recommendation, a game of the week recommendation. It's a lot of football going on at the moment, as you both know. So it's going to be quite interesting where you go with this.
Bring your food today. I'm ready.
Oh, I'm ready. Wow.
Talk about
Don's
food.
Ready. I've seen the document.
Yeah, you see, I've been doing some research on food. on the way they eat at Christmas in Italy. Because I knew you were coming in.
Uh-huh.
And you always bring the best food recommendations. Not that I don't want to hear about the game of the week first, though.
Obviously.
Do you have one?
Yeah, so it's Roma against Napoli this week. Whether or not that will be a spectacle, who knows, because often Roma's games aren't. But two teams that have been underperforming what they would have hoped to in the last little while. Well, Roma, I suppose, maybe closer to par. Napoli certainly underperforming as reigning champions. Both of them struggling to keep hold of a Champions League berth, which is hugely important to both of them. I think it is sort of both of them meeting at quite a, I don't know if perilous is quite the right word, but
delicate. Sort
of delicate, yes, a better word for where they are at the moment. And I think we'll set some moods going into the new year.
And Roma, are they, or Rome, is that regarded as central Italy?
I suppose so, yeah. It's certainly not in the... I think it sometimes gets grouped into the south,
yeah.
But you're right. I think that it's more central than anything else, yeah.
But Napoli would be south.
Naples is the south, yes.
Right, okay,
but they're only about an hour apart anyway, aren't they?
Yeah. So.
But the important thing is that in southern and central Italy, baked pasta is a must. So what's your food recommendation?
Italy is a place of many traditions of food, and this time of year you definitely get different things in different parts of the country. Where my family's from in Emilia Romagna, it's the same as all year round. People can eat a lot of pasta, generally right before Christmas, because this game's on the 23rd. People eat a bit of fish. But the one that was in my head for something different, since it's Napoli playing, and because I've got a terrible sweet tooth, these Neapolitan sweets called struffoli, which are like little balls of fried dough, which makes you think of a donut. But in my mind, they're almost halfway between that and something like gulab jamun, because they're drenched in honey and sometimes a little bit of alcohol as well. And then in that sort of very Italian way, candied fruits sprinkled over them. And yeah, that's something that, never mind my previous comments about trick-or-treating, I can scoff a few of those in one sitting if you let me.
So no meat again. Oh, my goodness.
Sorry.
Game of the week, Andy?
Well, obviously, regardless of the game of the week, there should be in every household a massive box of bacci, shouldn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Every
now
Christmas.
You're being a bit too clever for me. I haven't got bacci on my list.
Well, I'm sure it's on your Christmas list anyway, isn't it? Maybe Santa will come for you this year.
They're little chocolates with nuts in for Italy.
Thank you.
They're very good. Any good Italian deli, and you're in business there. I am going to another country that shows little regard for people's holiday plans, pretty much like the Premier League and Serie A this year. Christmas Eve, we've got the Intercontinental Derby between Fenerbahce and Galatasaray.
Mm.
It's going to be brilliant. And especially as they both won in midweek. They're both rattling along at record pace. They've dropped, 5 points each this season? I mean, they are absolutely flying. Both of them can feel quite aggrieved, because in any other season, they would be smashing the league. They would be 8-10 points in front. But they are absolutely neck and neck, Fenerbahce and Galatasaray. They've both got good sides this season. It's in Karaköy at Fenerbahce Stadium. It's going to be, I think, a really high quality as well as an undoubtedly intense and full of silly behaviour kind of match. Great way to see yourself into Christmas. Obviously, the food bit takes care of itself.
Of course.
Turkish food is as good as it gets. So,
Is that some halva that we've got out there?
Well,
outside the studio?
Oh, yeah. Well, producer Rory has very kindly brought us some baklava today, which is perhaps...
I put it
in my head.
That's halva to me. It's baklava. No, you're right. You're great. I'm wrong.
Okay. Well, I think, yeah, you want some excellent pistachio baklava to finish. Mm-hmm. But before that, of course... You want kuzu shish, I think, which is like sort of cubed lamb, together with, you know, you need red onion, you need parsley, you need a great red cabbage and carrot side salad involved. I think you need a nice little Turkish tea with your baklava as well to take the edge off. And obviously you need an indecently large portion.
They are a bit cheeky calling it the Intercontinental Derby, because obviously it's only the Bosphorus that separates them, you know? Well, I suppose they're the only country that can call it that. So why not? Well, that's about it from us for now. Thank you for listening to On the Continent. Make sure you join us again tomorrow for Ask OTC, where we'll be answering all of your questions about the latest news from the world of European football. And do make sure you subscribe in your podcast app so that you never miss an episode.
On the Continent is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.